Hello, friends. This is your premium episode for the week. It's me, Will Meneker, with the original Dry Boys.
Felix Biederman.
Matthew Christman.
But most importantly, special guest sitting in with us this week, Katie Halper. Katie, what's up?
Hi, what's up?
Katie Halper, the person who booked us our first live gig.
I know. Ever. I feel like I should be getting some royalties. Intellectual, emotional ones.
You own Chapo and all our subsidiary rights. But yeah, Katie booked our first live appearance together as Chapo Trap House, which was awesome, and will forever be in your debt, Katie. Yeah.
Thanks.
But more importantly than that, here's a fact that you may not know.
Oh, I know this.
Katie and myself are now La Familia?
Yeah, we're What's engaged. Up? We're engaged yes. to be La Familia.
Yes, me and Katie are getting married.
We are.
No. Our cousins are getting married. So I don't know what exactly that makes us, but if this were the mob, you would be in the family. Right,
that's totally. Like that's what Christopher and Tony were. That was like basically their relationship.
Yeah, definitely.
You guys are like marriage cousins. Mm. And the best kind of cousins. That's like the Wonder Twins. That's cousin through blood, whatever. You don't pick them. They're just your shitty cousin that you see. They suck. You hate them. You're better than them. You and your siblings are the best part of the family. They're shit. They're bringing you down. But marriage cousins, perfect.
Marriage is thicker than blood. Yeah. I'm actually really close to my cousins because I'm an only child. But that's neither here nor
that's
there.
That's weird. You shouldn't be. You should look at I them as competition. I shouldn't be an only child. Other cousins are just in your way. Like that's how I've always been. Seen that.
I'm actually really proud of one of my cousins because he was featured in a billboard at Manitowoc County for being a on the lam criminal.
Ooh, wow, that's pretty cool. Actually,
that is pretty cool. Katie, when is the wedding though? Is there a date set?
I think so, but I can't remember because it's an oppressive institution.
That's true. I do look forward to getting lit at the wedding though. And you know, we're all going to put our cash envelopes in a big pillowcase, and again, we're going to go, Katie, this is Peter, this is Paul, this is Marie, Petey, Paulie. And the sister Marie.
Even I forget.
I get confused myself.
Yeah. Congratulations to our cousins.
Jackie and Zach.
Jacqueline and Zach, yeah. Congratulations to them. Mazel tov, everybody.
Mazel tov.
Sente ane. Slancha.
May the Schwartz be with you.
That's the personal news to get out of the way. But
and I'm pregnant with Will's child. Again.
Quiet. Get down on the low.
We have to go on a tour of a fire escape staircase after this. unrelated reasons.
There's some topics I want to get to, including an article, Katie, that you just wrote, going back to our old hobby horse of Bernie Sanders and identity politics. Yes. Oh, baby, it's the issue that won't go away, and I'm almost sick of talking about it. But it's a necessary thing, and Katie, you wrote a good article.
I'm sorry, but the man who is sick of marginalizing WOC is sick of life.
That's true.
Before we get there, though, I do want to shout out at the beginning of the show some excellent, important work that's being done on Twitter right now by none other than Matt Christman. Matt is doing the Lord's work at the moment, and of course I'm talking about making the actor Paul Giamatti into a mega meme.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
He deserves it, folks, okay? I mean, I'm not just saying that because I look almost exactly like a slightly younger version of him, and that his screen persona kind of, to me, feels like my soul being broadcast onto the silver screen. But just because he's an incredibly versatile, gorgeous man, and I was inspired by everybody's one like equals one unpopular opinion or picture of my meals or blah, 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 to really give people online a gift. And that gift is one like equaling one picture of Paul Giamatti. I'm up to about 50. I have about 1,800 likes. And I am fully intending to get one for every single like that I've received. Of course, the problem there is that people can sort of like it infinitely, and I'll end up being sort of a Zeno's paradox where I'm never able to reach the finish line.
Well, Matt, but what you will eventually
With a lot of things, it's the journey, not the destination.
Well, I was going to say, Matt, what eventually you're going to have to start doing is just stalking Paul Giamatti and taking new photographs of him.
I'll do that. No problem. And the other part of it is that I found these two great pictures of him in the Getty collection of him on a red carpet and they're like taken at the same time, but there's different shots. One is of him looking very, very aloof and sort of suspicious, and one of him sort of smiling and engaging with the person he's talking to. And I've decided that that needs to also be its own meme. And you put those together, and you can do it in either direction. You can put the suspicious one first and then the smile, or vice versa, and you can turn it into anything fun. Like, I've done a couple.
It's yeah, it's all purpose to denote either going from a state of pleasure to despair to the opposite.
Exactly. Or the opposite. It's you could use it either way. They're both good. It's fuck that Drake shit. That Drake shit is played out.
Yes.
Get with
yes.
the Giamatti
yes.
shit.
Yes. No, the Giamatti meme. Like, yes. You need to go into 2017. Giamatti needs to become Harambe. He needs to become Drake. He needs to become, like, just all the lib Democrats should just make GIFs of Paul Giamatti smirking and just post that to react to, like, the latest Trump atrocity.
This is also the only type of good identity politics. Matt's identity politics between him and Paul Giamatti. It's the only empowering kind use of it.
I am Giamatti-kin. It's true.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, also selfishly, Matt, I'm hoping that this takes off and the great man himself becomes aware of it and he will eventually come on the show to talk to us about it.
That is my most honest dream. We've already had alt-right Giamatti on, and I would really love to complete it with the real thing.
Paul Giamatti, if you're listening, or if you're one of our celebrity fans who maybe knows him or has an email, hit us up. We would love to talk to Paul Giamatti about life, love, politics, everything. Everything that Giamatti himself encompasses in his many, many great performances. Agony and ecstasy and everything in between.
Anime and ecstasy. All of it.
Katie, let's talk about your article in Paste Magazine that came out today. Like I said, we're back to talking about Bernie Sanders and identity politics.
Sorry.
But you wrote this article in Paste Magazine. It came out today. And basically what you do is you go to this quote that came out. It was from November 20th where he gave a talk and was asked by a young woman in the audience who asked him, quote, "I want to be the second Latina senator in U.S. history. Any tips?" And, you know, he had a response to her that I thought was very good and thoughtful, but the part of it that was immediately clipped by all of the exact crowd that I think we know would latch on to it.
Phobic.
Yeah. Was when he said, this is after like a long preface. He said, but it's not good enough to say, hey, I'm a Latina, vote for me. That's not good enough. I have to know whether that Latina is going to stand up with the working class of this country, is going to take on the big money interests. And now I know, for instance, Rebecca Traister has used this as an example of like, well, this is what Bernie really thinks about, you know, young women or minorities who have aspirations of seeing themselves in power. This is sort of his flip dismissal of that. He thinks it's a flighty or sort of not serious, a serious concern. Right. Katie,
I don't know. Rebecca Traister uncharitably reading something. I don't think that could have happened.
Usually she's very good at that.
What's really weird is that, I mean, I talk about this in the piece when I quote her, but she says that she's upset that Sanders, quote, was recommending that Democrats embrace the working class and ditch identity politics, according to one headline. She wrote that, right? Mm-hmm. Then she says in the next sentence, in fact, the headline was overblown. Sanders did not say we should dump identity politics and affirmatively noted we should bring more and more women into the political process, blah, blah. But it's very weird that she quotes that headline at all. And the way she does it is a weird way where you can easily miss the clarifying sentence afterwards. And she doesn't, like, she's not really calling it out that much.
This is what I mean. Like, it's exhausting to respond to these kind of... And you list the reactions. You list the reactions to this, and I want to talk to you about that, about, you know, how the media responded, or, like, from the usual quarter, the usual suspects we all know. But, Matt, you know, I think about something you said earlier, or I forget when, but you just said, like, can we find just any one of these, like, critiques of the left from this identity politics perspective that isn't completely mendacious? I mean, I don't know. I've yet to come across it because either I just don't understand them because they're bad writers, or they're just like cynically being dishonest. Basically, I don't know which one it is. I mean, this is why it's exhausting because I feel like
I used to think that they were like in good faith, some of these people, And I feel like Castro, actually, with like the dirtbag left and liberals. You know how like it was actually the U.S. that forced Castro into the arms of the Soviet Union?
Sounds familiar.
Okay. Anyway, Castro wasn't really going to be as big of a communist originally as he wound up
Neither
being.
Was Ho Chi Minh, by the way.
So because the U.S. has that nice effect on people when they, you know, what was it? Albright, Senator Albright said something about reform versus revolution. If you like squash reform, you're going to have revolution, basically. I bring that up because I do feel like I used to be kind of this intermediary between the left and liberals, and I could hang out with both. I was always a lefty. I was born and raised that way, but you know, there are reasons to be in different coalitions. And I used to debate with people kind of in good faith on Twitter, and then I realized like there's very few people who actually I think that there are good people who support Clinton and they're honest people who support Clinton, but they are not people who trash Bernie Sanders. I've yet to meet one good Clintonite who feels the need to trash Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, I mean,
that's because, kind of my litmus test.
Yeah, I mean, because the only reason you would that someone would obsessively and currently still trash Sanders or the left wing of the party is because they're cultists. They do not believe the Democratic Party can fail. They believe it can only be failed.
Or they're right. I mean, or they're pretty centrist, right?
Yeah,
and they oppose his policies. And they literally, this was amazing. During the Democratic Platform Committee meetings, you literally had people who call themselves progressive complaining that he was making the platform more progressive, well, telling him to go home to back to Vermont, old man.
Well, yeah, they've never, I mean, they've never had actual politics. Like, they're just these types of media liberals and centrists. They're kind of like they're like tofu. They're flavored by whatever anything that's around them.
Actually, Felix, women's rights are human rights, and human rights are women's rights. That's a really important politics.
Another great thing that Madeleine Albright said: the only way to advance women's rights, you got to starve those Iraqi children.
Right.
They
sanction.
Are standing
sanction
in
the
way
fuck out of them.
Of
yeah.
Those. Today's Iraqi children are tomorrow's dude bros.
Totally.
So you got to
starve them.
Nip that in
right,
the bud.
Yeah. The reason it's so so disingenuous also is because like I bring up that quote where Clinton says, if we broke up the banks, would that end racism? And that like could not be more anti-intersectional. And she couldn't be pitting kind of social issues against economic ones any more strongly. And of course there's the issue that there is a relationship because of the foreclosure stuff and who it affected. It's not an anti-racist thing that happened. And anyone who didn't say anything about her saying that, it was like so cynical. It was a call and response thing. She was like, well, breaking up the banks end racism? No. Will it end sexism? No. Will it end like the bad treatment of immigrants? As if Bernie Sanders had laid out a plan, like, by breaking up the banks, we're going to end all these things. You know, that's how we end.
Once we return to the single provider platform, the women, they will be in the kitchen.
Right, exactly.
They will be
yeah.
back in the kitchen yeah. where they belong.
But I mean, you can't have any, I can't respect you if you consider yourself and claim to be an identity politics, like, stalwart or someone who speaks to on this issue and you didn't say anything about that. If you claim to care about intersectionality and you didn't say anything about what Hillary said there, you're either dishonest or very slow.
And like what's infuriating is that the people who are doing this in service of this diseased Democratic Party leadership, whether they're aware of it or not, but like these people should realize that the current Democratic Party and the leadership of that party will abandon every single issue that you care about or think is important, be it race, the environment, gun control, etc., before they will abandon neoliberal economics.
Right. And I thought the most mind-numbing thing about that whole thing of breaking up the banks and racism was that it implied that Hillary had this secret plan to end racism. It's like Nixon with Vietnam. She's going to go to Paris to negotiate the end of racism.
She's going to appear with Beyonce and Jay-Z. But she also said something. So, okay, Bernie Sanders in this spiel said about 7 times that identity politics were important, that there needs to be more representation, more diversity. He couldn't have said it. He basically said it as many times as he said, and yet we have to go beyond it. Hillary in her speech said, well, breaking up the banks and racism, and I'll do it if it proves that they prove a systemic risk. She's not even saying it's a problem, right? Like Sanders is saying this is a problem. The underrepresentation of people of color and women. We need more. We got about 20 female senators. We need about 50 more. Hillary is basically saying to apply the Hillarian like framing to this would have been like, Nah, it's not a look. If it turns out there's an underrepresentation problem, I'll look into it. We should do something about it. Right. But the thing is, class. That's not what she did. She just said like this stuff. Maybe there's a banking problem. Maybe it needs reform.
And like the thing is, when he said like that, but, and I remember a lot of people saying, well, when you say but, what you say after that will negate. Yeah, I mean, which is a stupid. That's like a dumb cliche. You think in cliches if that's what you come up with, but. When he said it's not enough to just say, I'm a Latina, vote for me. I want to know whether you can stand up for the working class of this country, et cetera, et cetera. That even on itself is 100% right. And I'll tell you exactly why. Look at what's going on right now. If you really believe that,
Ben Carson,
you should be happy that like Nikki Haley is going to be a UN rep. You should be happy about Ben Carson or Sheriff David Clark. Or I remember seeing all these memes like right after the Trump transition team where they're like, Peter Thiel, gay man.
Right.
And like listing all these like, you know, sexual and relational minorities that are involved in the Trump administration. It's like, well, be happy for them.
Well, and people.
That's good.
I had Leslie Lee on my show.
Oh, he's great.
And he was talking about how he made the point. He's like, these people are disingenuous. I don't trust them at all, the ones who misinterpret Sanders on identity politics. And he said, but what happens is people who aren't disingenuous read the stories and the headlines and they assume that these people are being truthful. But he also made the point, like, liberals get this when it comes to Republicans. They don't support Sarah Palin because she's a woman. They don't support Michelle Bachmann because she's a woman. They understand that people aren't tokens. I mean, that's the irony, is that basically all the people mad at Sanders are mad at him for, like, looking at people of color, at LGBTQ people, women, immigrants, etc., as like real life people, as opposed to tokens and caricatures who are always going to be woke and progressive. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
He wants you to have policies, just like every white politician.
And what's interesting is that, like, at the highest levels of politics, like in terms of representation, at the presidential level, at those highest levels, they're all tokens, and representation matters far, far less than politics at that level. It matters more the lower you get.
Right, sure.
Kashama Sawant made that exact point to Rebecca Traister in a Democracy Now! Debate that they had. We should link to that. It's actually very interesting. Yeah. But
and he's not even making the point that a lot of people we know make, which is that it's like it's cynical and devious, and it's a way to co-opt identity politics and weaponize them in a way to kind of to stifle critiques of neoliberalism. He's not even saying that. Maybe he probably agrees with that behind closed doors, but he's not saying that. All he's saying is that this stuff is important, and so is policy. Like, that's all he's saying. And I like the idea. I was thinking of this because he says we have to, the big question of the future of the Democratic Party is whether we go beyond identity politics, which was translated by TPM into ditching identity politics. And I was thinking, like, it would be funny if someone was like, how do I get to that monument? And you're like, oh, that's easy. You just walk a couple blocks and then you ditch the church on your right and then you make another right. And then
Sanders urges supporters dine and dash on identity politics. Yeah.
And that was the TPM thing, right?
Yeah.
Put some doo-doo in the bag, ring the doorbell for identity politics and run away.
It's just so crazy. I don't know what they want from him. I mean, he literally said it multiple times that it's important. It's the philosophy concept. It's not that deep of being necessary but insufficient.
Yeah.
He's the reason she lost. Yeah. They're never going to give him a break.
Well, in their minds,
it couldn't be Hillary's fault. It's got to be somebody else's.
Right.
Therefore, he is the one who did it because he put doubts in people's minds about her.
Didn't he, the fact
that she's has 30 years in politics and was already one of the most divisive and least trusted characters in American political history when she declared. The fact that he... And he was so nice about it.
I know. He ran across the country for her.
It was enough. He stood in her path and he soiled her with the Youngs. And then they didn't come out for her. It had nothing to do with the absolutely contentless, just smug, useless campaign, incompetent campaign that they ran.
Entitled,
so they'll never let him go.
Well, you know,
they're always going to hate him forever, and that's why the best thing he can do now, because you know he's obviously the path forward is going to involve finding, you know, people to sort of take up his mantle, because he's not going to be able to persist as some sort of leader for anything like the time frame we need. What he can do best is just troll the shit out of these people.
Right.
That if you say but negate it, like that's literally true of any time anything happened and Hillary would have to make a statement right. about it. She would do the both sides right. do it every single okay. fucking time.
I think she got Jesus versus Marrow.
The idea that it was she was running an anti-bigotry campaign and that she didn't put fucking Leon Panetta and Michael Bloomberg on stage at her convention. Like, what was... I would defy anyone to tell me what her actual anti-bigotry policies were, besides, like, just fucking moving her head like an uncanny robotic owl.
Oh, wait, no, wait a minute. Trump was mean to that, the lady, the one lady from the lady who tried to murder her boyfriend.
Wait, Hope Solo?
She decided... Machado.
Yeah. Oh, Alicia Machado. Oh, Alicia Machado. Nice. No, the best thing about
Alicia, that one lady.
No, but he called her Miss Piggy. But the best thing about that was that all these woke Trump supporters got on Twitter and tried to shit on Alicia Machado because she had played a character and worn a fat suit. And they were like, oh, Alicia Machado is saying that Trump called her Miss Piggy, but she body shamed people on like this Univision or like on this telenovela. Like all these right wing reactionary racist bigots were calling her
She dressed up like a giant bumblebee and said, yeah. I corrupt. Yeah.
She appropriated, they're becoming woke now. Alicia Machado appropriated their culture as enormous obese people and shamed them.
Well, also Anna Kasparian called Alex Jones a fat fuck, and someone and when he crashed the stage and the Young Turks thing, right? At the was it the DNC or the RNC? It was in a moment of passion. She called him a fat fuck, and then someone online was like, Anna Kasparian body shaming and fat shaming Alex Jones.
I love it.
Because they're woke Trump people. And Trump himself is woke.
That's the point, though, is like it reveals it's the weakness enough. Of all of this. The fact that it's not enough is that anyone can pick it up and use it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, whereas, like, this is not to say identity politics is insubstantial or flighty
or unnecessary. Yeah.
That's completely not true. But. Absent the one weapon that the other side actually can't pick up and hit you with, it's ineffective. It's not enough.
I was thinking,
it can be turned. It will be turned against you all the time, as we're seeing now. And maybe that's a good way to segue into this, the Keith Ellison thing.
Yeah,
I think that's another example of how
this is
kind of a cynical use of identity politics. The fact that ADL has managed to, they're absolutely sure that he's an anti-Semite because of his associations with the Nation of Islam like 20 years ago. But we should be careful about calling anyone in Trump's cabinet of like actual Nazi ghouls who are like, you know.
Alan Dershowitz.
Oh, God.
Was on. Who was he on?
Steve Bannon has gotten most of his money from Seinfeld.
Yeah.
How could he be an anti-Semite?
Steve Bannon loves Jews. Like Steve Bannon,
he just doesn't want his kids to go to school with them because we're too smart, and he knows that they'll fail because of the curve.
He doesn't want his children to compete against Jewish children.
Exactly, like because that's a losing battle.
Yeah, it is. It's a losing battle, and also he doesn't want to pit whites against Jews. That's just rude, and it's racist to do. Steve Bannon's coke dealer is Jewish. The guy who sucks fluid out of his neck every month. That doctor is Jewish. The guy who gives him morphine enemas is Iranian.
Half Jewish.
He's a Persian Jew.
Yeah.
There is this very surreal moment where like actual white nationalist hardcore anti-Semitic politics openly.
See, I'm going to stop you right there. I don't know if they're anti-Semitic or not.
Yeah, exactly.
Like a Nazi salute. It's open to interpretation.
Yeah. Richard Spencer. Exactly. Back to this asshole.
I don't like to pigeonhole people. Labels are for jars.
I mean, but it's like it doesn't. Okay, like the ADL has fucked more old Jews out of money than fucking Bernie Madoff ever could. But it's like actually, who cares if they think Steve Bannon's anti-Semitic? Because it's like, okay, then what? Like, holy shit, the ADL released a statement.
No, it just shows
But I think people are mad.
I know. They're total hypocrites.
Yeah.
It's also, it shows the limits of what the ADL can actually do. It's like, okay, you called people anti-Semitic for 30 fucking years. Probably 80% of the time, it had no relation to what they actually said or did. And... okay, your only function is, your only ability is to call people out. That doesn't work. That doesn't stop something from existing. And, like, Nazis are proud of how much they like to, they can shock liberals and make them feel uncomfortable. Like, A, because it's, like, you should, like, it is funny.
Well, I guess, unfortunately, the problem is that, as we talked about with T in that show recently, is that liberals are the only people who actually move on these stupid call-out moments.
Right, they're the only
people. Keith Ellison might actually suffer consequences of this stuff, whereas Steve Bannon, even if the ADL were calling him rightfully an anti-Semite, probably
I mean, if I was Steve, I wouldn't give a shit either. It was like, okay, I'm a Nazi. Now what? What are you going to do?
I know. I love when people call out people for being problematic or patriarchal or heteronormative. Like, these people don't want you to say they're not heteronormative. Like,
what only works on nominally our own team.
Right, exactly.
And so that's why it's anyone cares about what the ADL is saying.
It's like Halo. Okay, you know when you...
I was about to say that.
Okay. You know when you get the Covenant...
Oh, I thought you meant the Beyonce song.
No, not the Beyonce song. An actual piece of art. Video game Halo. When you pick up the Covenant's guns and you try to use them on the Covenant, they're not as powerful as UNSC bullets. Because you have this...
I fucking hated the Covenant weapons.
They're shit, dude. They fucking suck. And using the worst Covenant weapon is probably the Needler or the Plasma
Pistol. The Needler sucks.
Yep. That's like the Needler and the Plasma Pistol.
The Plasma Pistol,
like,
you can charge it up and get rid of
the
shield.
Sucks, though. It still
sucks.
The rifle
was okay.
Also, the rifle sucks, too. It's the least shitty one, but it's like that, using those on Nazis is like using liberal call-out culture.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. There's a great documentary called Defamation that's all about the ADL, and it's this Israeli guy who went to make a documentary about them, and because he's Israeli, they just assumed that he was going to be mishpucha, you know, family, and on their side, and he just shows how ridiculous they are, and they do reports on, like, a cop. They're like, oh, we heard this cop was leaving a funeral, and he was like, I'm getting off work right after the Jew thing I'm at, because it was a Jewish funeral, and they were like really, you know, that was a call for action for the ADL. But also, Abe Foxman, like, came out and said about, like, these released back in 2010, there were these released tapes from Richard Nixon where he was super anti-Semitic. And his big takeaway, Abe Foxman, I know, he called, you know, he thought Rehnquist was a Jew. And he's like, what's the name of that Jew? Reinsberg? What's the name of him? He's wearing those goofy shirts. He is gay, though. I mean, and there's a Jewish or gay thing, but Rehnquist was definitely gay. And he wore, like, hush puppies and pink shirts. And even, you know, he had bars. He had three gold bands added to his robe because of this character from Iolanthe, which is a Gilbert and Sullivan musical.
Holy shit.
And there's a fairy minister character, a fairy president. He had them added. And then he also always wore a scarf, which I call, he had a tracheotomy, so I think it was like a tracheo scarf or something. But yeah, he called him Rehnquist, and it was kind of amazing. Anyway, Abe Foxman's big takeaway from these released tapes was that Nixon was a bigot, but he was a supporter of Israel.
So yeah, that is the only litmus test that they care about
in terms of who
because, I mean, like, they've made their bed with, like, the most insane Christian reactionaries in this country over the issue of Israel. They've absolved them of any of their noxious or bigotries, especially towards Jewish people.
Right.
So yeah, everything they say is completely fraudulent.
I mean, Zionism has no problem coexisting with Nazism. For people who don't know, one of the terrorist groups that was present during the founding of Israel, the Stern Gang, openly collaborated with the Third Reich. Menachem Begin, who is not in the Stern Gang, he was in the Irgun.
Yep.
He was so mad at the British for hanging his friend who was in the Stern Gang that he airlifted weapons to Argentina during the Falklands War.
No.
But it didn't get there till 2 weeks after the war ended. So.
These were the tapes, by the way, when Kissinger was like, they put Jews into gas chambers in the Soviet Union. It's not an American concern. He's like, I'm a Jew. That doesn't give me any solidarity with Jews.
No,
he was like Bernie.
He's an internationalist. Bernie. He's an intersectionalist. Yeah, yeah, totally.
I will give my voters a list of all the Jews in the State Department.
Yes, yes. You want a list? I got them right here. I got a list right here. I got a list for you.
Can we talk about safety pin box?
And but someone... Keith Ellison's great. Let's just say Keith Ellison's great. He's the future of the Democratic Party, or else it'll be destroyed.
Someone showed me... some of the sample tasks that were being offered at $100 a month by Safety Pin Box. Should we even just preface what Safety Pin Box is?
Yes.
Safety Pin Box is another hot topic this week. It was launched by two, I'm going to say Black Lives Matter activists, but even that's probably a stretch. And basically what it is that they're offering basically for $100 a month, it says here, it's a monthly subscription box for white people striving to be allies in the fight for black liberation. Box memberships are a way not only to financially support black femme freedom fighters, but also complete measurable tasks in the fight against white supremacy. And you subscribe for $100 a month, and basically what you get is homework assignments. And someone showed me what one of the sample homework assignments was, and it involved keeping a journal of what they refer to as power mapping. And power mapping is you're supposed to, like, whenever you're in a room or in a social setting, be at work or in your personal life, you're supposed to sort of, like, analyze who has the most power in the room. Yeah, it's $100 a month, and you basically get homework assignments. That's what you're paying for. Now, I want to be clear here. This has gotten, you know, it's very controversial. People are, you know, accusing us of, like, you know, slandering black activists or saying that they don't need money. I want to be 100% clear. I'm in no way making fun of the people who founded Safety Pin Box. I'm making fun of any of the fucking marks who are going to pay them money. And if they do get a lot of money out of this,
the consumers, not the
providers, 100% for it, they deserve it.
Yeah, I think it's, look, I think one of the funniest things you can do is, like, scam stupid liberals out of money. It's really funny to do. It's,
if they're making, like, money doing this and they're putting their money towards, you know, their livelihoods and activism, I'm 100% for it. However, someone said, well, what's the difference between what they're doing and what you're doing, referring to Chapo? And I said, not much, except they're 20 times more expensive. That would be the main difference between them and us. I want to make actually my identity politics spiel right now. I've been trying to think of a way to do this on the show, but now that I have my platform, I'm going to say this. So we've been talking about, on this episode, liberals and other people who use this idea, you already know the arguments that they're going to pull out, and they're invoked in either a dumb or in a completely cynical way. And I just like to say, if you find someone online who's doing that about us, about the show, that you find stupid or dishonest or just offensive in any way, and you are like me, a heterosexual white man sitting atop a mountain of unearned privilege
and cis,
I would just say the best thing you can do is use their own logic, remain silent, just no comment, stand back, and let our female and POC fans of the show absolutely shred these motherfuckers.
Totally.
It's more effective, and our lady fans in particular, I will say, are not even low-key, are just outright the
totally
most
vicious.
The most savage.
They're so fucking
just,
awesome.
So just enjoy. Enjoy when it happens. You don't even need to amplify voices. You just need to watch and laugh. Show. I think I want to dip back into our reading series. Is that cool with you guys?
I've been waiting for this one.
Okay. I want to do this because I want to go back to a fan favorite character in the reading series. We've gotten a lot of new subscriptions after the election. I know a lot of people are, like, going back through the whole catalog. Some of you maybe are not familiar with this, but I'm returning now in the Chapo reading series to the Caleb Jacoby saga. This is a fan favorite. It may be my favorite reading series.
I just want to tell any new listeners and new subscribers that the original part one of the Caleb saga is, I believe, episode 49. It's episode 49. It's simply titled Caleb, and it might be the best thing we've ever done. So listen to it for that reason alone, but that's where you'll find
it. We need to talk about Caleb. Just to briefly recap, Caleb is the teenage fail son of Boston Globe columnist Jeff Jacoby, who he, for many years, wrote an annual column in the form of an open letter to his son, Caleb. They're all archived. They are extraordinary.
They all rule. All of them are fucking great.
So I want to dip back in now to the Caleb saga. And I have two of these letters that I want to read now on the show. You guys ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
Oh, yeah.
The first one is entitled Letter to a Mensch in Training. It begins, "My beloved Caleb, there was an awful story in the paper a few days ago."
It's an awful, terrible story.
A 16-year-old Brighton High School student, it began, has been charged with slashing a 14-year-old girl's face with a razor blade in Dorchester Park, leaving a gash that required more than 100 stitches to close. Oh, the story was on the front page of the Metro section, along with a large photograph of the 14-year-old. Her face is now disfigured by an angry red scar stretching from her forehead to her lip. She said she and some of her friends had been challenged to a fight by another group of girls and had been told that if they didn't show up, the other girls would find them and beat them on the street. I made a point of showing you that story so we could talk about it. Such violence and intimidation are far removed from anything you've ever experienced, Caleb. But you're no longer too young to know that many other children are not so fortunate, including some in your own backyard. When we talked about that news story, I told you that safety is one of the reasons Mama and I send you to the Hebrew Academy instead of public school. You've never seen a fist fight, never mind a gang brawl with razor blades. When you first read the story, you weren't even sure what a razor blade was.
Oh my God. This is so good.
Here's the kick. So he describes this, like, you know, violent razor slashing in some shitty neighborhood in Boston. And he said, I wanted to talk to you about this, Caleb, and discuss this news article with you. Here's the kicker. He says, now, as a 9-year-old...
Well, is this after the terrible phase that we talked about?
I believe this is pre his bad mouthing phase.
This is...
sass talk.
Holy shit, this had the opposite effect. It had the opposite effect. Because he wanted to scare Caleb straight, but by, like, opening him up to the big, scary world, Caleb's like, I want to see a fist fight. I want to see a knife fight. Yeah. I'm going to go to Times Square and see it all go down. Yo, he fucked Caleb up.
There's one more section from this article I want to read. So he says... blah, blah, blah. The most your parents and teachers can help you do is equip you to make the right choice. So we work at it, always keeping an eye out to reinforce the better angels of your nature. Again, he's fucking 9 years old. Yeah. When you brought home your report card in December, I wasn't thrilled with the grades you had gotten in behavior, self-control, and respect for your teachers and peers. Which is why I offered you an incentive. If on your next report card, all your behavior marks went up, you would be rewarded with one of the iSpy you like so much. There's a link on iSpy. Is this... iSpy is a book of picture riddles.
Okay. Train emoji, baby. Choo-choo, bitch. Hell yeah.
It said 3 weeks ago, your second report card came home. And what do you know? Your conduct and character had improved across the board. Way to go.
Good work, Caleb.
Good work, Caleb.
Do you remember the just the dread? Or at least, I don't know. Maybe I'm unique in this regard, but the dread you had of the report card coming home, and that you just having your parents see it and having, you know, to explain yourself, and then imagine knowing not only will that happen, but it will then be published for at least the entire city of Boston to read
and ridicule
in a national paper after that. It sounds horrifying.
Yeah. Mr. Jacoby, just making sure we're running through a spell check about your column about your pussy son who had bad behavior. Before everyone in America reads it. All right, we're sending it out.
Okay, so that was the first one. I think that's sort of a preface to this one, which is really good. It's called Testing the Sales is the name of this letter. It begins, as they all do, "My beloved Caleb. Not long ago, I stumbled upon a document you created on your computer. It was titled...
Oh, no.
Oh, boy. Oh,
it was
Oh, no.
Oh, boy.
It was titled Rules and Suggestions for Stealing Candy.
I didn't know what it was going to be, but I didn't know it was going to be that good.
That Holy is the shit. Best thing it could have been.
That is the best,
this is the best it could have been.
And sure enough, it gets better. It gets better. It gets better. Sure enough, what followed was a series of pointers on how to filch sweets and get away with it. This is real. Katie, this is real. This is real. Rule number four.
The 10 crackle commandments.
Rule number four. Rule number four, for example, advised clean up after yourself. Don't leave a big mess or others will know that you took something. Remember to close doors, cupboards, drawers, and containers. But Caleb, okay, so this is 2000. Caleb is now 11, I believe.
Oh my god!
It was certainly a brazen piece of writing. It was also, I couldn't help noticing, well organized and carefully spell checked. To your credit, you didn't deny authorship when I confronted you with it. Unfortunately, you didn't seem to be the least bit remorseful either.
Caleb's fucking, he's from the streets.
Yo, dude, this is like the end of Dead Presidents. For your crimes, Caleb, of stealing candy, which were violent in nature and conciliatory and deceptive, you show no remorse. I'm sentencing you to 10 minutes in your room. And then, like Lorenz Tate in Dead Presidents, he throws the chair at his dad, goes, all this shit I did for this motherfucking household, man, fuck you! And then Isaac Hayes walks up, walk on by plays as Caleb gets on the bus to Times Square to steal more candy.
Gird yourself, gentlemen and lady. Your penchant for stealing or pinching treats is not exactly a newsflash. You've been caught at it more than a few times. Most recently, when I came across a full-size box of Fruit Loot stashed under the covers in your bed.
He takes Ambien.
Mama was aghast when I showed it to her. By now, she's decided you're well on your way to a criminal career. Again, sorry, not to be like the most stereotypical Jewish mother in the world, but this is fucking ridiculous.
He's going to be fencing goods!
this kid's 11 and they're finding like Fruit Loops under his bed. Imagine if they found like a penthouse or something like that.
Well, that's what I thought you were going to say when you said a document on the computer.
Yeah, well, like any fucking normal 11-year-old. Yeah.
Why didn't he write out instructions for himself?
It's like the Midrash. It's like commentary. Third person, you know, rabbinical tradition.
But I can recall similar sins. Sneaking down to the basement freezer, for example, spoon in hand to gorge on ice cream when no one was looking.
Oh, it's the spoon theme.
Or pilfering chocolates from the food locker and refusing to fess up, even though it meant letting suspicion fall on my siblings.
What's a food locker?
What the
hell? That's like a foot locker.
The sins of the father have been put down.
Yeah,
the
exactly.
Son.
It's true.
They have like 50 refrigerators in this asshole's house, and they're like, Caleb, for some reason, you're obsessed with food.
He lives in a freezer.
Caleb,
actually.
I caught you in the 11th freezer. Why are you so obsessed with treats?
In the food locker.
You fat little asshole.
In the food locker.
I'm sorry. I have to read this entire one.
Make me really hungry, though. I'm not going to lie. I really want chocolate.
I
want
to read the document.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Save to folder. Caleb _food_theft .xls.
These are actually the top secret documents that Eric and Ivanka and Donald Trump Jr. have access to now. Are the Pentagon candy stealing
files. If Podesta got his hands on this, this would be like pedophilia.
He would have been able to get more kids to go into his van.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. Oh, you can't let him see it.
There's now actual like spit on my computer screen from reading this.
Oh
but,
my god!
What does the Jewish pedophile say? Really quick. What does the Jewish pedophile say? It's related. Don't worry, it's related.
Ooh, kid, easy on that candy. Yeah. That's the one my mom told me.
No. What did you? That's funny. It's another. No. Yeah. What did Jewish pedophile say? Hey, kid, you want to buy some candy?
Okay, he continues. Nowadays, it's what comes out of your mouth, not what goes into it, that is more likely to get you in trouble.
Uh-oh, does he have a case of verbal diarrhea?
At times, you seem to go out of your way to give offense, spouting ill-mannered comments or mocking jibes that you know quite well are going to provoke a backlash. As a tween, quote-unquote, I could be like that too. Time and again, I would pop off, pushing my teacher's buttons with obnoxious remarks or inappropriate wisecracks, frequently getting kicked out of a class as a consequence. I wasn't nearly so insolent at home, where my parents believed in corporal punishment and lived up to that belief. With you, it's the other way around. The backtalk and insubordination you save up for your parents while at school, your teachers sing your praises and tell us how courteous, mature, and pleasant you are.
Dude, I'm he's so pissed off at his kid.
He hates his kid. Yo, imagine if you're this asshole's editor. And you're like, are you sure you want to run this? This is 500 words about what an obnoxious little fat treat monger your son is. Are you sure? This is a national column, Jeff.
This entire article is basically an invitation for all of his classmates to stuff his locker with fucking donuts and like pelt him with fucking as he walks down the street.
This is exactly like fucking Gomer Pyle in Full Metal Jacket when he finds the jelly donut in his locker. He had a Foot Locker. That was his Foot Locker.
And
he goes, you eat it, they're paying for it.
Remember, it's just a bad dream, fat boy.
Ow!
This guy has major food issues.
Yeah.
That his kids is obviously inheriting.
Well, Jeff Jacoby is a chubby motherfucker.
Yeah, he's
full figured.
I mean, Jeff is upset that he has to buy treats for two. He has to account for Caleb's thieving.
Jeff writes, I'm quite willing to live with your occasional pique and petulance if it means the rest of the world sees you at your best. I can't say I enjoy our tug of wars, but I understand them.
That sounds enabling.
With the approach of adolescence, you sometimes find yourself feeling irritable and resentful, aggrieved by perceived indignities, beset by fools and charlatans whose only skill seems to be to get in your way or on your nerves.
Caleb hates charlatans. Yeah, dude.
Believe it or not, I've been there too. And if you think your parents excel at finding ways to annoy you now, just wait until you're 14 or 15. We'll be really good at it then.
What happened to him as a 14-year-old? Like,
he's
so
a monster.
Weird. It's so
I'm just
oddly
picturing,
specific, too.
The Caleb,
you're 14 and a half.
Caleb in his bedroom, and Jeff comes in and asks, like, where did you, with the document print, where did you learn to do this? He goes, I learned it from you!
Yeah, exactly. Totally. Totally.
Stocking food all
over. Totally. Yeah, because, like, Jeff's first columns for the Boston Globe were like, how an adult's guide to finding treats at the office.
Yeah, exactly.
They're like, that's what created his star. He won a Pulitzer Prize for his treat columns.
Well, my dream now is that Caleb is going to grow up and write a tell-all memoir called My Asshole Father. Yeah.
Dude, Jeff is a fucking tyrant. I hate him.
We should kidnap Caleb. Yeah. We'll lure him with candy.
When you were a baby, I loved watching you sleep. Sometimes I would stroke your tiny hand as you lay in your crib, and you would instinctively wrap your fingers around one of mine, clinging to me even in your sleep.
Thinking it was a lolly.
Could you sense somehow that I was a safe harbor, a snug refuge from the world's storms and stresses? Mama and I have tried to be that haven, to furnish you with the physical, emotional, and spiritual resources you will need on your journey through life. But harbors aren't only places of sanctuary and shelter. They're also stable places you push back from when it's time to head out into the world. You're 11 now, growing steadily more independent and beginning to test your sails. Increasingly, you push back instead of clinging, insisting on your way instead of mine. The day will eventually come when you're ready to head off on your own. Wherever the voyage takes you, Caleb, will always be your home port. All my love, Papa.
I think Caleb's his inner child and doesn't actually
exist. You fat piece of shit!
What if he's not a real person?
That's an intriguing theory.
Yo, that's Fight Club. This is Fight Club. Yeah. Like, dude, Jeff wakes up in the middle of the night with no memory.
Oh my god, he's the one sneaking treats!
Yeah,
that's
exactly
what I'm saying. He's his inner child. He's his chubby inner child, and he's talking to himself.
There are photos of Caleb Jacoby out there. He has a SoundCloud page. Caleb, I gotta say, is sort of like a lanky.
Right.
He's like,
jealous. The
he's
dad's
skinny.
Totally
like Caleb
jealous.
Is not a chubby kid at
right.
all.
Right.
Jeff is jealous.
Jeff's a fat fuck, dude.
Yeah. Jeff is jealous. Yeah. But he could also be picking up a model kid, like a fake kid, to play his son.
Yeah.
If we think it is his inner child to whom he's speaking, which makes more sense because who talks to an 11-year-old like that?
No, dude. This is clearly Fight Club. This is the sequel to Fight Club, and like at the end of the movie.
The Pixies.
Jeff, as Caleb, set up bombs
right.
in the Hershey's and
Mars
bar. Mars
my treats. Where is my treats?
Where's my mounds? Right. Where are my mounds?
Right. He's in the building watching it with Helena Bonham Carter, and he's like, you know, after he pops himself in the mouth, and he's like, "You caught me at a weird time in my life. When I was turning 12, which is a pivotal time in a boy's life.
Although not like 14 and 15 when you really act out.
Yeah, when I'm really going to punish myself.
Right.
But yeah, no, it's, yeah, where is my treats at the end?
Again, spoiler alert, if you go back to episode 49, the punchline to all of this is that Caleb Jacoby ran away from home when he was 14 or 15 and was missing and was found in Times Square like 3 days later. And more power to him because...
M&M store, I guarantee fucking to
yeah.
you.
Yes, M&M store, exactly. Totally,
that's
yeah.
the ultimate...
That's how they found him, the trail of M&M.
Yeah, that is so Freudian. He left home to live amongst candy. That's amazing.
I'd rather live free amongst candy.
Dude, as a Goodwill thing, we should use 1 month of the show's Patreon to let... to pay for Caleb to rent a room in the M&M store.
Well, just
for
let
a
him
year.
Like remember in like those things on like MTV or Nickelodeon where you get to go into the store and buy as much
yeah,
toys.
Yeah,
as
yeah,
can,
yeah.
Just raise you know $1,000.
Give him like $25K.
Yeah,
dude,
exactly.
Fuck that, Caleb. Next time you run away from home, come to the Trap in Brooklyn.
Yeah, dude.
Smoke weed, fucking
yeah,
like
we
get
love
lit,
candy,
munchies,
dude.
Eat
candy.
Love
candy, dude.
Got so
be
many
fucking
treats,
rude.
Yo. Got so many
rude
treats
all the time.
We're gonna teach you swears you've never heard of.
We're gonna give you so many awesome swears that when you go back to your folks and you unleash them, their faces are gonna melt like the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Will, like M&M's not in your hand.
Will,
in your mouth.
Will, who is your new dad? He worked in publishing, so he knows like just. Every bad word.
Yes.
More than your bitch ass biological father ever did. Matt, who's your uncle now, he's going to teach you like how to beer, all that shit. You've never had an older brother. I'm your older brother now. I'm going to teach you sports and misogyny and fist fighting and racism. You're going to be racist. Katie is going to be your aunt.
Yeah,
she's going to teach you.
Contala.
Yeah. Yeah. She's going to teach you about like the best treats. Your dad probably doesn't give you those Hanukkah golden coins. Katie will. Brendan is your cousin. Brendan's gonna like he's gonna show you Linkin Park, fucking Korn, all the cool bands.
What's the first rule of Jewish Fight Club?
What is it?
it's $19.99 for a month. The starting rate.
Okay, yeah.
You know, tell your friends about it. Tell everybody about Jewish Fight Club.
What's the difference between a Jewish mother and an Italian mother?
What?
An Italian mother says, eat your breakfast or I'm going to kill you. The Jewish mother says, eat your breakfast, I'm going to kill myself.
I think we'll put a bow on the most anti-Semitic show we've ever done.
Yeah.
Very proud of us this episode. But... again, the Caleb Jacoby saga continues. So fucking good.
Oh,
dude.
My God.
So good.
Holy shit.
Katie Halper.
Oh, can I say I have a Patreon for the Katie Halper Show?
Absolutely.
It's patreon.com/the Katie Halper Show.
Great gems. We will link to that
yeah.
in the show info and on the Chapo account.
And I'm Katie Halps on Twitter. Letter K, letter T, H-A-L-P-S.
Everybody follow if you are not doing already. Katie, see you at the wedding.
Yes.
See you at the birth of our illegitimate child.
The birth of our nation.
Next year in Jerusalem.
Exactly.
Till next time, guys.
Bye.
Peace.
Thank
Peace.
You. Bye.
Bye-bye. You're too high. Take a ride here to fly. And right now I might just rob me a nigga.
Look, the kid's got bosoms. Who's gonna watch home? Come here, you butterball.
Don't make me an aunt.
Got me lurking and looking for a lame nigga to set up for my next league. In the Chevy, about to roll up the stress with the tech and with the yacht on his neck. Got him a death wish. It's kind of funny because he used to be my nigga though. He was breaking bread, flipping bricks like a year ago. Chicken get into a nigga head when his digits low. Make you want to send one of your friends to a funeral. Maybe me and him was never friends in the first place. Don't mean a thing, could we share the same birthplace? Same city, same hood, but we down in